8 o'clock.
Good morning. This is Northern Light for Tuesday, August 3rd. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
COVID-19 cases in New York have quadrupled over the last month. Hospitalizations have doubled. Governor Andrew Cuomo is urging indoor mask usage, but stopped short of issuing a mask mandate.
I don't believe a mask policy is going to be enough. I think we're going to have to talk about a vaccination policy.
The effects of climate change are already being felt by communities on the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence River in terms of the environment and the economy.
Overall, throughout the lakes, we're looking at $2 billion worth of expected expenditures over the next 5 years.
Also, we'll visit a historic site in Ogdensburg along the St. Lawrence, where work is underway to prevent future erosion with a living shoreline. All of that's coming up. Stick with us.
Broadcast in Northern Light is supported by Adirondack Foundation and the Adirondack Birth to Three Alliance, dedicated to providing all children the best possible start in life. AdirondackBT3.org and Long Run Wealth, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Lake Placid, providing bespoke wealth management, retirement, and financial planning solutions. LongRunWealth.com.
This is North Country Public Radio. It's 8:02 today on this Tuesday, August 3rd. Good morning. I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe.
Governor Andrew Cuomo is urging local governments where COVID-19 cases are rising to issue an indoor mask mandate, but he stopped short of a statewide mandate. Many of New York cities, including New York, Albany, and Buffalo, are already at the level the CDC recommends requiring indoor masking. At a coronavirus briefing in New York City yesterday, Cuomo said a law would be required for another statewide mandate.
It's up to the local governments. But local governments, you should adopt that CDC mask guidance. Learn the lesson from last year. Don't deny reality.
Cuomo said most new coronavirus cases in New York are the Delta variant, which is more transmissible, can cause serious health problems or death among unvaccinated people, and is more likely to infect vaccinated people as well. COVID-19 cases statewide have quadrupled over the last month. The number of hospitalizations has doubled in the same time frame. Cuomo urged the 25% of eligible New Yorkers who've not been vaccinated to get the shot as soon as possible. And he pressed private businesses from stadiums to bars and restaurants to require vaccinations.
If I go to a restaurant and I'm sitting at a table and the table right next to me, I want to know that they're vaccinated. I believe it's in your business interest to run a vaccine-only establishment.
Cuomo also warned that if cases continue to rise, the state could impose vaccine mandates for teachers, nursing home workers, and public-facing healthcare workers. State employees already have to get the shot. Cuomo announced yesterday that New York City Transit and Port Authority workers will need to get vaccinated or get tested weekly starting September 1st. From Albany, Karen DeWitt has more.
Under the new federal CDC guidelines about the spread of the more contagious Delta variant, indoor mask wearing is now recommended in several counties in New York. So far, though, few counties have imposed new mask mandates. Cuomo, who is vaccinated, says he has decided to resume wearing a mask in indoor settings if he's in a high-risk locality.
And the locality says, wear a mask. I'm going to wear a mask because I wore a mask for a year. It's not the biggest deal in the world. And I could get this Delta variant, and I could spread the Delta variant. So better safe than sorry, I'm going to wear a mask.
But he says he does not believe that new mask mandates will be the answer to tamping down the spread of the Delta variant. He says the state needs to instead intensify its efforts to get more of its population vaccinated.
Everybody is talking about a mask policy. Mask policy will be important, but I don't believe a mask policy is going to be enough. I think we're going to have to talk about a vaccination policy.
Currently, just over 57% of all New Yorkers are fully vaccinated. That's below the levels considered necessary to reach herd immunity. The governor says if the spread of Delta continues, then nursing homes should impose mandatory vaccination policies for all of their employees, and schools should require teachers to get the vaccine before school starts next month.
School opens in 1 month. If you don't set a policy today, you're going to have chaos when school opens, because it'll be impossible for a teacher to get the two shots done.
And Cuomo once again is urging bars and restaurants to consider allowing only vaccinated patrons to eat and drink at their establishments. Restaurant groups say while they support owners who have already made the decision to only accept vaccinated customers, they understand why it would be difficult for many bars and restaurants to on their own impose and enforce vaccine mandates. While Cuomo extended mandatory vaccines to the 50,000 or so employees of the state-run mass transit system, he no longer has the power to impose similar policies on anyone not directly working for the state of New York. The governor ended the pandemic state of emergency in June and now can only recommend that private businesses and local governments adopt similar rules. The governor warned, though, that if the virus rate continues to increase, then he'll consider declaring a new state of emergency. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You're listening to Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past eight. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, construction continues this summer in Ogdensburg at the Fort de la Presentacion site to stabilize the area's shoreline and raise a portion of its trail system. We'll talk with a local historian and a designer about creating a living shoreline as a first step to redeveloping the site. That's coming up in just a few minutes. Right here on NCPR. And don't forget, coming up on the next North Country Bookmarks this Friday at lunchtime, Lauren Ho, Danielle Henderson, and Kenya Hunt talk about what makes up a family and who gets to define it. Join host Jessica Lawrence this Friday between noon and 1 o'clock for the next North Country Bookmarks, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This is music by Canton composer Christopher Watts. Northern Light is supported by Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, welcoming Dr. Henry Gaborio, a facial plastic and reconstructive surgeon specializing in skin cancer screenings, cosmetic procedures, and acne treatments. Details at AdirondackHealth.org. And Adirondack Land Trust, working to protect trails and open spaces for the health and enjoyment of our communities. AdirondackLandTrust.org.
$2 billion. That's how much communities on the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence River are planning to spend in coming years to repair damages from flooding and erosion of recent years. That data comes from a survey of cities and towns across the region conducted by Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative. Ryan Finnerty spoke with the group's executive director, John Altenberg, about what communities in New York are facing.
New York communities are planning to spend about $101 million over the next 5 years, but that's only public property, municipal property. That doesn't include private property, both residential and commercial property, and it's not all of the cities that are across the corridor of the lakes and the St. Lawrence River. The approximate spend was $36 million U.S. dollars over the last 2 years in New York. But overall, throughout the lakes, we're looking at $2 billion worth of expected expenditures over the next 5 years, and already close to $1 billion has been spent. So you can assume that this number is much higher.
What is that money being spent on?
Everything from damage to piers for commercial purposes to disappearing shoreline where there are beaches to erosion and damage to city property, parks, etc. There are issues for water intake tanks among many cities where the erosion is causing damage into those intake tanks, which are threatening some cities' water supplies. It's a pretty severe situation. And across the lakes, the question is, the buildings that are near the lakes, are they going to see erosion problems? And I'm not assuming, because they don't have the information from Miami yet, but will we see similar situations because of erosion on our lakes with damaged buildings?
And, you know, on the Great Lakes, there's a lot of very small communities that aren't necessarily equipped financially or, you know, technically to handle some of these challenges. What do these, I guess, cities, big and small, but particularly small and more rural communities need to address some of these challenges?
Just under a quarter of the cities that responded actually have planning to deal with this type of situation. These cities don't have the technology, they don't have the employees that have the experience and the knowledge to address these issues. They don't even have staff to even apply for some of these grants that are on a federal and state level. So we as an organization are starting to interact with those smaller to medium-sized communities to help them do that. But there has to be also regional planning. And we need better data. Right now, we know in general what global warming or climate change is doing to the Great Lakes, but we don't have forecasting over the next 30 to 50 years of what we can expect. So, you know, some of that money is going to have to go towards research to be able to project things. But you also need to think about, with small communities, there's a non-federal match requirement typically with federal funds. So we're asking the federal government to not impose 25% non-federal funding matches. The cities simply can't afford it. Our request is that they try to keep it under 5%. You know, when you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of damage, like in Chicago, that's a major chunk of funding that has to come up from our cities. Think about that impact on a small community. It's huge. It just leads to problems occurring and inability to address these problems.
When it comes to damage you've been discussing, is it mostly coming from major kind of high profile events like storms or floods, or is it more of a slow drip of fluctuation and erosion and just kind of instability that's causing most of the damage?
It's both, unfortunately. Flooding and storms are causing the erosion to increase, but in general, high water, even when there's low water in the lakes, is causing erosion, instability of the lakeshore. So it's a multiple set of problems that are causing this issue. I think it's the responsibility of citizens that are along these coastlines and even not along these coastlines to really ask their members of Congress and their state legislators to address this problem. It's not going away. It's just going to get worse.
That was John Altenberg of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative speaking with Ryan Finnerty about the effect of climate change on communities along those bodies of water. Tomorrow on Northern Light, we'll have part two of the interview, which explores how communities along those bodies of water can adapt to the climate change.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Trails in Ogdensburg have sustained damage, and the property has been inundated with periods of high water over the last few years. Coming up, we'll hear about the prospects of a living shoreline as the answer to erosion. It's coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, here is a look at the weather. It's 52 degrees in North Creek, 55 in Lowville, 64 degrees in Brushton. Sunny skies throughout the North Country today. Highs around 80, finally warming up after such chilly weather. Sunny skies expected throughout the region for the next couple of days until the start of the weekend. Historians, engineers, and environmentalists are collaborating on a living shoreline on Van Rensselaer Point in Ogdensburg this summer. The result will be more stable shorelines along the St. Lawrence and Oswegatchie Rivers for wildlife, dog walkers, anglers, ship spotters, and Fort de la Presentación. It's a local history group. The association's property received a great deal of flooding 2 years ago, and it feared even more damage would occur in future flooding.
The St. Lawrence shoreline has long been valued for pristine views of the seaway, ship spotting, bird watching, acres of green space for visitors to picnic and recreate. And it was hoped to come up with a solution for flood control, which also contributed to visitors' experiences and appreciation of the river. The project was funded by a Lake Ontario Resiliency and Economic Development Initiative, or READY, grant. I stopped by recently for an update on the work this summer, and I spoke with an engineer, the head of the construction crew, and Tim Kreiderman, a board member of Fort de la Presentación Association. Kreiderman says the living shoreline will improve and expand the uses of the 27-acre site beyond heritage and history.
It gives people a place to come, relax, and enjoy it. In fact, we're building an observation deck with Adirondack furniture for people who just like to sit and look at the river and watch the ships go up and down.
So we're talking about, we've got the St. Lawrence on one side and the Oswegatchie on the other, right?
Yes. That's a nice, beautiful point. You can see downriver each way. You can see into Canada quite easily. And it's just a beautiful spot. 27 acres of just pure enjoyment and relaxation. And it will be a great asset to the area and to the city of Ogdensburg.
And you mentioned you have a new acquisition of some more land here.
Yes. We recently got another just over an acre of land. It holds the original fort site, and we're hoping to have an archaeological dig here in the near future to get more artifacts of the original fort and find the original fort itself, the flooring of the bastions and et cetera.
And tell me, give me your name and your title. And
I'm Barney Cook. I'm a superintendent for TJ Fiacco Construction. I'm pretty much overseeing the work done here.
Yeah. What's going on right now, Barney?
We're pumping down the water so we can excavate to start our tow wood installing. We have to get below the water, so we got to get the water down. We put a cofferdam in. And
So what's the size of your crew? How many people?
I got four guys on site today. And we got more guys coming in to do more of the shore protection down the line here.
Have you done other projects like this before?
This is my very first one with the tow wood, and so it's a learning experience for me.
Yeah. What do you think? So the challenge is going to be to kind of make this look as natural maybe as possible in terms of
that, as close as he's got it on the plan.
Yeah. Follow the instructions.
I try to, yes.
I'm Andy Rimpf. I'm a director of our landscape architecture services at the Chazen Companies. Our role here is we were retained initially years ago to help the association build the original pathway network and kind of do the first phase of the park. Well, since then, the Lake Ontario watershed's changed a little bit, and therefore the impacts of the property have come across that resulted in some endangerment to the shoreline and the usability of the park for its intended purpose. And so we were retained through a grant from the READY Commission to come in and do a design for an adaptive climate-resilient design for shoreline protection, stabilization, and flood mitigation. And we're really proud of the progress we've made. The construction's going rather well. The water levels this spring were low, which allowed us to accelerate work ahead of schedule, actually.
From a layman's point of view, you know, it might be simpler to just throw a bunch of rocks along the shore or something, or just if you talk about stabilization, but you folks are doing what you're calling this living shoreline, so you're taking into account the ecology and the environment and the wildlife, and you know, it's not just fishing, which is a big part of the economy here. It's not just a matter of how can we quickly and easily stabilize this? But you're keeping in mind a number of different factors, right?
Right, right. You know, one really important mission statement was you know, flood resiliency from high water levels. So typically in a lot of projects, you'll see the engineering will account for that by putting in a bulkhead, you know, a sheet pile, something that really armors that shoreline and does a wonderful job at that one mission. You know, our second mission was realizing that it's a public park meant for the enjoyment and education of the visitors of the history of the park. And then the third kind of component we blended in was, what is the impact on the natural environment? And so that drove us to looking at alternative solutions from those hardened armored solutions. And that's where we came up with what they call a tow wood, tow rock kind of stream edge restoration process on the Oswegatchie shore, and a stone sill native planting application on the St. Lawrence side. And those do benefit both aquatic and terrestrial species, both of those. They provide the armoring that's required for the shoreline stabilization, and they also provide that resiliency factor, because we know the climate is adapting rapidly on us now. You know, the water levels today versus the water levels, you know, next month are always different. So what design can be nimble enough, you know, to serve not just people, but every component of the ecological landscape? And so that kind of led us to this living shoreline approach.
So is it safe to say stabilization, resilience, and less of an impact on the environment?
Correct.
Yeah.
Those kind of three pillars were really, really important to us. And even the process during construction follows those same three pillars.
And the idea here, too, is you're going to install interpretive signs so that when people come down here and say, what happened or what's going on, they can kind of get a visualization of what the shoreline is doing, right?
Yeah, in the world of creating landscape and places that impact people, you know, the interpretation to me and the stewardship of educating people on why we do things, how we do things, and what the value of those is just as important as being able to take a pretty picture while you're at a park looking at the scenery. As Tim mentioned, it's a beautiful point. I see a sailboat in the background. You know, you can see Canada from miles to miles. You know, and it's beautiful there. But when somebody comes here, their memory should be of, why was this property here? What value did it have? What value does it have now? And what value into the future, you know, is the park, you know, possessing? And that's a different experience than just coming to a park to throw a frisbee.
Andy Rimpf is an engineer with Chazen Companies. We also heard from Tim Kreiderman, a vice president with the Fort de la Presentacion Association, and Barney Cook with Fiaco Construction, who says the shoreline work on Van Rensselaer Point should be completed by late fall or early next spring.
You're listening to Northern Light right here on North Country Public Radio. The time is 8:23. And right now, we're going to listen to a little bit of music from Michael Bridge. The CBC has named him one of the 30 hottest classical musicians under 30. He's performing at the Sembrick this Saturday in Bolton Landing. This is his piece, Intoxicating. It's a tango he composed that he plans to play on Saturday. And I should mention, he's an accordion player.
Thank you.
That is Michael Bridge, known as the Wizard of the Accordion. He's playing this Saturday evening at 6 o'clock at the Sembrick in Bolton Landing. You can find out more from the Sembrick.
Broadcast of Northern Light here on North Country Public Radio is supported by CECOM Credit Union, serving the financial needs of people throughout Northern New York and Vermont in person, online at CECOM.org and on your smartphone, and Guideboat Realty, located in Saranac Lake, where health, history, and the arts meet in the Adirondacks. Your guide to Adirondack real estate, GuideboatRealty.com. Really nice day today, Monica Sandresky. Sunshine. Look at that blue sky.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Forecast to highs in the 70s today. You know, yesterday was like 73. That was my temperature.
It was
gorgeous. Yeah, it was just like perfect. It was just like, I don't need it any warmer than this.
Yes, any hotter than that, and it's time for a nap in front
of
the AC. So that's perfect. That's perfect. Well, Todd, I do want to, speaking of beautiful weather, yeah. I do want to share a little bit with you about what I did last night. If you could play that sound for us.
Ah, okay, here we go.
Oh! Ah! Yeah! Woo! Scott River Band, let's go!
And you went to the game.
I did. I went to the baseball game last night at Tupper Lake. The Tupper Lake River Pigs were playing the New Hampshire Wild at Municipal Park there, and that was some great sound from it. Everybody, all the fans were completely stoked. I had never been there before, but it's such a great little park there. And $5 a ticket, you just can't beat it. But the Tupper Lake River Pigs are playing the Plattsburgh Thunderbirds tonight in a single elimination wild card game before the Empire League Championship Series starts on, it must be Wednesday night. No, Thursday night on
Thursday,
the 5th.
Yeah. Did your team win last night?
Well, that's the thing. We didn't stay for the end of the game because I had to be here. I needed to be here tomorrow.
Don't ask that question. Yeah,
yes,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll find out tomorrow if they won the game. But yeah, the Empire League, the championship series starts this week, and we'll be with the Saranac Lake Surge is the other team that's playing. Oh, yes. This was a little bit of music that from last night, of course.
Can I get it to play? Okay, that's the question. We may have to listen to this baseball music tomorrow. My computer's being a little bit on the slow side this morning. You know how that goes. But yeah, so baseball in the North Country. Monica Sandresky, here we go. Here's some of that great baseball music. To the ball game.
Oh, goodness. Yes,
right.
It was a very excited team. It was an absolutely excited team. They are an independent league, so it's not considered single A or double A.
Time now, 8:29.
That is the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute. We'll be talking with a former NFL cornerback, Orlando Scandrick, about the league's new coronavirus mandates and why he decided to get vaccinated. That's coming up in just a few minutes on Morning Edition.
If you've got a smartphone or one of those little recorders and you're at an event like Monica was last night, record some sound, crowds, music, cheers. Send it to us. Email us the sound file. We want to hear what's going on in your world and share it with other listeners. Radio@ncpr.org.
And if you miss an episode of Northern Light, do not worry. You can listen back to the archive any place you get podcasts while you're there. Subscribe to our daily news roundup, Story of the Day. Or you can listen live to that show every weekday afternoon, 4:50. I'm Monica Sandresky.
I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for joining us.